Today we have with us on HelpAlongTheWay.com podcast, Jade Simonetto of Hate Eternal. So welcome, Jade.
Hey, how's it going, boss?
Great. Phoenix Amongst the Ashes is the new record, and
yep.
It's recorded at Mana Studios, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And did y'all have to acquire any new equipment or tools to record this record?
Just our personal chops, man. I mean, in terms of drums, I definitely got an upgrade. I got a whole line of new Zildjian cymbals. That's what we were used on the record. But apart from that, I think pretty much everything remained the same, with the addition of JJ on bass. I believe he was using a Fender on the record. I can't be sure about that, but a couple of new things we used, but pretty much everything remained the same. Production-wise, you know, you'd have to ask Eric. I'm sure he has all kinds of new mics and stuff in his studio, and you know, he's constantly upgrading over there, so, but in terms of everything else, everything pretty much remained the same. Same drum set. You know what? We didn't use that drum set on the last record. That was a DW before I was endorsed with Pearl. So, yeah, this record was the Pearl reference. It's a whole new drum set. There you go.
Awesome. So, is that the same set that George Colley is used, same setup that he has?
No, I don't think he used that kit when he came to record with Eric. I think he had his own, you know, 25-piece kit that he had ordered from Pearl. That guy, I mean, George is a whole nother level of player, man. So, you know, all those drums he's got, he actually uses them, man. So, you know, he's got multiple toms and a lot of stuff going on the left side of his kit. So, yeah, he had his own thing in the studio.
All right. Now, is this your second record with Hate Eternal?
Yes.
The first record you recorded with them, I really liked it. It was like a raw, abrasive sound. It wasn't a lot of production. You know, it didn't sound like it was recorded in a box. It sounded like it was recorded live, which I really liked.
Yeah, now, it doesn't sound like a surgical, you know, pro-tooled thing. Yeah, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, it's not sterile, you know?
Yeah.
So, given that, and then given this new record that I've heard a little bit of, which I like so far, it seems like you and Eric and JJ, y'all just mesh really tight. And you're playing stronger, faster, harder, meaner, all together. What do you think accounts for this meshing of styles and the chemistry between all of you?
Well, on my end, for sure, I would have to say that having toured with the band for a couple of years has really honed in on my death metal skills. I mean, you know, as much as I was prepared, you know, to do the first few tours, I was nowhere near where I am now drum-wise, and I think that, you know, that played a big role in me and my performance on that record. And, you know, all three of us have been touring for quite some time now, so we have a really good chemistry in the studio and on stage, and we know our limitations, and we know each other's you know, we just know how to work together, man. So I think that came across real well on this record, because you can definitely hear that we are a solid band and we got all our shit together.
So how long did it take in the inception or concepts of lyrics to the final CD product? How long do you think that took?
Lyrically, you mean?
Well, lyrically and musically, you know, just from the very beginning, hey, we want to record a new CD, up until, hey, it's, you know, April 21st and we're interviewing for the CD.
Dude, I mean, musically, I can remember that one of the first riffs that I can remember, Eric was jamming that as far back as January 2009. He came up with that riff in a basement of a Belgian venue, like, before we were going on stage. He was literally in a basement playing that same riff for, like, 2 hours. The intro for The Art of Redemption, that crazy 300 beat per minute part.
Yes.
He was playing that for, like, 2 hours in a basement, man. And that goes, like, way back on the Eon tour we did in Europe, so... musically, man, you know, we've been throwing ideas around since you know, 3 years ago, two, 3 years ago. But, I mean, it really all came together as a whole in the last year. I mean, you know, musically, the bulk of the stuff was written in this last year. And JJ had a very intricate part in the writing process, more than any other previous Hate Eternal band member, if I'm not mistaken. You know, he also wrote all of his bass lines. So it's a very nice collage of everybody's creative energies on this record. So definitely you can hear that whole vibe. This record has a whole other vibe.
Right, yeah, it takes it up at least two or three notches since the last record, I think.
Definitely a couple of notches.
Yeah. You know, given the location of the studio, we know it's in St. Petersburg, right? So
yep.
You got the ocean on either side of you, essentially. So did y'all have any issues with climate control in the recording process, specifically with your part in the drums? What I'm talking about is all the humidity. So I've talked with some drummers before, and they're like, man, you know, you change climates. You know, you go Colorado down to South Texas, and your drum kit changes, you know.
But my drum kit, the drum kit I use here is always in Florida. I got a drum kit back home that I use in Montreal, but Eric's studio has an extreme, you know, a really good climate control system, so it's always nice and cool inside of the studio. That never changes, so no, there was never any issues with tuning or climate or anything. I know that JJ was freezing his ass off on one of the tracking days because it was so AC'd out in there. I think that turns out to be beneficial. Two or three songs in, when you're sweating your ass off, you actually start to appreciate the AC.
Exactly. Now, we're going to go to another section. It's called the current state of the band and touring. So far, we know there's three solid members of the band, okay?
Yep.
Is there a plan to add additional players on the tour as y'all get ready for Europe?
Nah, man. I think that, you know, we're going to remain a three-piece, and that's a general consensus in this band is, you know, we're going to be a three-piece, and it's going to stay that way. You know, we had Sean in the band for a while, and you know, it was cool, man. You know, live you get that extra layering of music, and you know, all those two guitar parts come to life. You know, I think we just sound better as a three-piece, and I think Hate Eternal more than anything else is about ferocity and just being brutal live, man. I think we do that perfectly as a three-piece. You know, two great vocalists. You know, you got Eric on guitar. He's a one-man band. That guy, man. He doesn't need a guitar to compliment him. You know, JJ's a great bass player, and they both have really strong, powerful vocals, so with that and me behind on the kit, man, it's just, we don't need anyone else.
Very good. It's kind of like ZZ Top, you know. It's always been the three, and it'll continue to stay that way for as long as they live, so that's good to hear. You know,
yeah,
now, we know you're getting ready for the European tour. Was it next week?
Yeah, we are leaving. We're going to be leaving next Wednesday.
Next Wednesday, okay. Now, are there any special, or are there any new locations in Europe that y'all will be playing at for the first time?
Well, I'm sure Eric's played them all before, you know, he's been in Morbid Angel and stuff, so, and he's been touring for so long, but for me and JJ, I mean, this will be my first time in Poland. I can't speak for the other guys. This is my first time going to Poland. I think there's some new places in Spain that I haven't been to before, and maybe a couple places in the UK. But usually, you know, there seems to be a repeating pattern when you're doing a tour. You know, you hit all these specific cities, you know, Vienna, Rome, Paris, things like that. So, you know, all those cool repeat cities, and I have no problem with that, man, because I love going to Vienna and visiting the old churches and stuff. So, but I'm looking forward to going to Poland, man. I know that the fans over there are crazy, and there's so much good heavy metal coming out of Poland. So, you know that they take their stuff seriously over there. I'm looking forward to meeting some Polish fans.
Awesome. You know, Defiled, they're scheduled to be one of the bands on the tour.
Yeah.
Now, knowing they're from Japan, are they going to be able to make the tour?
As far as I know,
all the tragedies they've had.
As far as I know, I don't think there's any delay on them getting on the tour. I mean, I think we would have heard something by now. You know, management would have said something. You know, I wish the best to those guys and anybody else who's going through that right now. I mean, I've watched some of the footage on TV, and it just breaks my heart, man. It's scary to think that, you know, you can go from just having a normal day to your whole, everything you know around you just collapsing, man. It's scary, man. It can happen to anybody. Nobody's above it, man. You know, we live in a natural world, and, you know, natural disasters happen, man, and it can happen at any time, so my heart goes out to everybody over there, and I hope those guys make it out and, you know, try and show those guys a good time on tour to hopefully make them forget the shit that's going on over in their homeland.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear, and I hope they make it too, because I heard their latest release on Season of Mist, and, you know, I've heard some bands from Japan that were pretty good. But they just really ripped it. I'm like, man, these guys are good. So I just, you know, continuously all day long, play. I'm like, man, these guys are good.
We got a good lineup on this one.
Exactly. So when y'all tour, Do y'all have like a pit crew of sorts that, you know, set up all the equipment and do the merch, or is that handled strictly by the members of the band?
We got Ben who does merch. That's our merch guy. He lives in Ohio. He's going to be coming in on Monday. He's, you know, Ben's basically like the fourth member of the band who doesn't play an instrument. You know, he's just part of the family. He's always rolling with us, man, you know, wherever we go. So, you know, we trust him with our lives, man, and all our merch and all that shit. So he's our merch guy, and that's the crew, man, us four. And, you know, the occasional sound guy, you know, here and there. But we don't have, like, a sound guy per se yet. You know, we've been through a couple of changes. But so far, our solid crew is us three and then Ben, who does merch. And but, you know, we set up all our own gear, man. You know, we're just, fuck it. Do everything yourself, man.
That way it's done right.
Yeah, well, exactly, man. I mean, you just, you know, you can always depend on yourself to do a right job. And if you don't, then you only have yourself to blame.
Yeah, that's true. You know, speaking of soundboard, sound engineer, back in February, the Finnish metal tour came through, you know, Texas. Fortunately, they played up here where I live because the Austin show got canceled because of the ice and all that fun stuff. But I got to meet up with the sound guy, and it was Christoph, the bass player for Samael out of Switzerland. And that guy was really cool, man, and he did a top-notch job on the sound because it was, you know, Insepharum, let's see, Sinful, Rotten Sound, and Barren Earth, and he did a phenomenal job with them. So, hey, just a plug if you're interested, so I just throw that out there.
Yeah.
You know, when you're on tour, we know there's lots of distractions, there's interviews, there's phone calls, there's, you know, family situations going on, people sick. How do y'all stay focused when there's all these distractions?
Oh, man. I mean, you got to fall into some sort of a routine when you're on tour, man. You know that you're going to do certain things at a certain hour, man, because you can't leave. You know, you got to have a certain calendar, man, or else you get nothing done, man, I swear to God, because, you know, you got the performance on your mind all day because that's what you're on the road for. So it's like you got to make time for other things, man, like, you know, I try to work out during the day, and, you know, I try to keep up with my girlfriend, you know, I call my family too, and, you know, just the basic things in life, man, just like, you know, family, friends, and, you know, health, and obviously, you know, we try to go out and have, you know, 3 square meals a day. We'll wake up and go find some breakfast, have some lunch, dinner, just the necessities of life, just to maintain a sane state of mind. We just try to do all that, and then, you know, you do your 1 hour warm up before the show, and then you tear down the gear, the whole thing. But you just gotta maintain a schedule when you're on tour, or else everything is just out of control. You're sleeping to ridiculous hours, and fuck, where'd I put my shoes and shit like that. So
yeah. All right. Now we'll get into some of your personal history. Knowing that you're from Montreal,
yep.
You know, the music scene there is huge, or at least that's my perception living way down here in Texas.
Oh, it is. It is.
So, and I know they've got quite a good symphony orchestra and all that good stuff. So does the classical part of Montreal, the traditional artistic, for lack of a better word, symphony sound, you know, from that city, does that have any influence on your playing, or at least what you hear in terms of music and arrangements?
Well, one thing that seems to be a common thing is a lot of people say that there's a lot of great musicians coming out of Montreal, great drummers, great guitar players. And I think one thing that our educational system, you know, we have, you know, mandatory music and mandatory art classes, and it's not like that all over the place. You know, like, I had to learn music way early, man, and it was, you know, it was an obligation. You had to learn how to read music, and obviously I didn't like the shit, you know, flutes and trumpets and all that don't interest me, man. As cool as it is, I have complete respect for orchestras and, you know, any kind of musical instrument is just not for me, man. You know, I've always been a percussive guy, so.
Right.
Learning any facet of music at an early age develops your brain to understand that kind of stuff better. So, definitely, you know, the transition to playing drums was an easy one. I mean, I just, you know, plus I grew up in a super musical family. Like, my father, he's an extraordinary guitar player. My mom works in the music industry, so. For me, I mean, I live, breathe, and eat music, man, all day. That's what I do. So,
yeah. So you've been plugged in since birth, essentially.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, I know that all these other guys, you know, the guys from Despise Icon and Beneath Masker, man, Ion Dissonance, they grew up, you know, with musical education. That's why they're just, you know, it's as much as it's a passion, it's been an education for a lot of these guys. So it's you know, they got both sides of that covered.
Right. Several months ago, and that brings up a good question. Several months ago, I had an interview with Maynard Moore, singer for the Plasma Rifle.
Yeah, my boy Maynard, man.
Yeah, so we were talking, and I said, man, I got so many good metal bands. And I said, well, why is that? And he's like, well, it snows a lot. He said, you're either into hockey or you're not, you know, when it's icy and wintry, and, you know,
yep.
I do music. And he said, so it just, you know, it just forces you indoors. And so we had a really good conversation. But, you know, that's good to hear about the education system, because down here, at least in our state, there's lots of financial troubles. The government has cut the education budget by billions of dollars. Many school districts or school areas in various towns and cities and areas are really suffering. They're laying off all sorts of people, teachers, administrators, people they really need. Not just the extra get-me-paid, you know, people, but people that really do a job. And so the class sizes are
the workforce of the heart of that thing, you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. And so, you know, the class sizes are getting larger, and they're cutting fine arts programs, art classes, music classes.
Man.
But
terrible, man.
Yeah, and what they do not cut, really, not at least not a whole lot, are the sports. Don't get me wrong, sports are great. And I think there should be a balance, right? But
yeah, there definitely should be a balance, but that's like, kids play sports regardless, man. You know what I mean? They set up soccer games outside and shit like that. So to me, the only thing that sports really teach you in a school environment is you know, teamwork and, you know, healthy competition and stuff like that. But, like, I don't know, I think it's important especially for young kids and stuff like that, to explore creativity, and it's a very large part of your brain, man, and you need to develop that as much as anything else, you know, academics and, you know, physical prowess, whatever, man. But, like, it's sad to hear that, man, that they're cutting down on education. It's like one of the fundamentals of a thriving culture or a country is, you know, a steady education, or else what are you doing, man? You're you know, de-evolution right there.
Yeah, there's lots of philosophies or thoughts I have on that, and you know how it relates to government. But anyway, now we're going to go into a new section called Perspectives and Introspectives.
Okay.
And what I'm going to do right now is give you a situation, and I'm going to just flat out ask you what your judgment would be on this, okay? And granted, I don't have all the facts of this situation, but it, I mean, just random... maybe not random, but just so many violent things have been occurring in our area. It's really scary, but I'll go ahead and pitch this out to you. So recently in Dallas, there was a 12-year-old boy. He was run over by a 17-year-old who was fleeing the scene of a fist fight.
Oh, wow.
Now, what we know is that the 12-year-old was at a park nearby, near an apartment complex, with his friend just hanging out, and they were going home.
Okay.
And he was walking down the parking lot, and I guess with his bicycle or going to get his bike. It just last week, the boy passed away after being in a coma for several days. So April 14th, the boy died, okay? His 13th birthday would have been this past Sunday. Now, if you were the judge in this case, knowing you're not a judge, but if you were the judge, what would your judgment be against or on the 17-year-old?
Okay, so this 17-year-old was fleeing a situation in his automobile and ran over another kid. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
It's difficult to say, man. It's like, who's at fault here? You know what I mean? I think maybe that 12-year-old was just maybe a victim of circumstance, just, you know, wrong place at the wrong time. But I think anybody in their right judgment has the right to flee, you know, a dangerous situation. And I don't know, maybe you would have to been there to understand the whole thing. I mean, you don't know where he was driving, how he was driving. I couldn't tell you per se what what my judgment would be on that, because I would have had to, you know, to see it with my own eyes. But definitely, one thing I can say is anybody has the right to flee a dangerous situation. You know, if you feel like your life is threatened, you know, fight or flight, man. And if you choose flight, then that's your right. But hey, that rhymed. That was pretty killer. But I'm just saying, I mean, obviously, man, that it's a super tragedy what happened to that kid. I mean, but, you know, some people are just in the wrong place at the wrong time, I think, and you can't put anybody at fault for that. I mean, but then again, I mean, it's easy to point fingers at that other kid and say it's his fault, but, I mean, I don't know. And maybe then again, maybe that kid was lying. Maybe he just said, oh, I was running from something. Maybe he wasn't running from everything. Maybe he was drunk. You don't know that, you know what I mean?
So yeah, and one important fact I left out by accident was there was actually some kid that had his video phone out there.
Oh, so it. Okay, so it was documented.
Yes.
So what was he doing, burning a red light?
No, he was just, it was pretty chaotic. And what I remember seeing is that the 17-year-old got in the car and took off down the road. And as he took off down the parking lot, you hear all these kids screaming, oh my gosh, he's been hit. You know, and then, you know, a whole bunch of chaos. And, of course, the news isn't going to show the whole thing. But they blacked it out right before it happened.
Well, I think that definitely some sort of penalty should be put on that 17-year-old. I don't think something as severe as maybe a, you know, something you would give a murderer, but something to make him reflect his actions. You know, like, you got to consider if you're driving down a road with a vehicle at a ridiculous speed, chances are, you know, you may be getting out of a dangerous situation, but you're putting others in a dangerous situation by doing something like that. But also, I would say that maybe the people he was running from should be, you know, should have judgment passed on as well. You know, they shouldn't get away with anything, because, you know, basically that was a trickle-down effect, and it was probably their fault. You know, it all happened because they were trying to instigate something with somebody, and so they're partially responsible as well.
Yeah, well, good perspective. I appreciate you know sharing that, and that's something I didn't think of. I only thought a part of it, and I haven't had a lot of time to think about it since then. But, you know, it's just been one crazy violent thing after another. Several weeks ago, I had an interview with Stefan Kummerer, you know, of Obscura.
Okay.
And just a few days before that, some people were in a church working, and they got murdered.
In a
church.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just been really wild. I'm like, man, I don't understand what's going on, you know. But anyway, I just thought I'd bring that up. So I'm going to kind of change it up a little bit now.
Okay.
In terms of your outlook, is the gas tank half full or half empty? Or the glass half full or half empty?
You know what? Being from a country like Canada where seasons affect your mood so much, man, I think that you know, that state of mind goes with, honestly, it's seasonal, man, because in the winter I get pretty bummed out, and I'm definitely a half-empty kind of guy. But when it's summertime or when I'm down here in Florida, like right now I'm feeling pretty damn half-full, you know what I mean? So I'm feeling good. And I think, I think it's just how people feel, man. It's not really I don't think it's really like an ingrained philosophy of how, you know, how you look at things all the time. I think if somebody's having a tough time in their life, or, you know, if things are going well for somebody, it definitely changes your perspective on everything, man. So, you know, right now things are good. I'm down here in Florida, just sitting in the sun before, so I'm feeling good about everything right now. I'm ready to go on tour and have a good time. As to where maybe if you would have asked me this question 2 months ago, sitting at home in a winter, miserable winter environment where I'm getting like an hour of sunlight a day, I probably would have said everything sucks. This sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's true.
It has to. Yeah, I think everything has to do with people's current, you know, state of mind, their living conditions, everything, man. Everything plays a role.
Cool. You know, what is one metal band that you're listening to now that you think listeners should check out? You know, one that we may not have heard of.
Oh, one that you may not have heard of. Holy crap. Well, you know what, man? you know, and I hate to, you know, I hate to say that, because then maybe these guys are gonna be like, oh, what, we're, you think we're a band that nobody's heard of, you douchebag? You know what I mean? Like,
well, we'll say it this way: what is one band you're listening to now that you think more people should know about? They may be out there already.
Aeon, definitely.
Okay, are those the guys from Sweden?
Yeah, those are the crazy Swedes. That's what I call those guys, the Swedish maniacs, man. Because they really are, man. Those guys are just, they're super cool dudes, man. None of those guys have any egos. And you know what? They'll smoke about 95% of other bands out there. So, Aeon,
check it
out. And they're
also on Metal Blade, correct?
I believe so, yeah. I'm pretty sure they are. Yep.
Very good. excuse me. In today's fast pace of technology, you know, is the physical CD distribution an important aspect for the band or on this record, or is it null due to the fact that there are outfits like iTunes, eMusic, Amazon, MP3, etc.?
Well, see, my mom works in the music industry, and that's one thing the music industry is struggling to cope with, is this big change happening, and, you know, retail basically becoming obsolete, and they're just trying to figure out the next step, you know what I mean? And I don't think they have figured it out yet. I mean, sure, there's a transition going on right now, but a transition is not a solution. And it's a difficult time for retail and bands and labels and everything, man. It's actually a very scary time. And, you know, I have a philosophy that because of the internet, retail in the next 100 years will become zero. There will be no more clothing stores. There will be no more shoe stores. Supermarkets will become warehouses, and everything will be delivered online. And that's going to create a big problem for employment, man. And I think internet's ruining humanity. Sorry to say it. And I mean, I'm not above it, because I'm on the internet every single day. Facebook, emails, blah blah blah. You know, it's just the modern life we live, man. But it's scary to think where it's going. Actually, very scary.
Now, why, other than the economic impacts you just described, is there something else that makes it scary or frightening or, you know, looming?
Yeah, there's also the fact that, you know, there's all these things called a social network, but a social network, network basically means that you have no social life. You know, people use a social network to avoid social interaction. You know what I mean? It's like, you're on Facebook, you're not talking to anybody, really. You're just typing on a screen, man, and eventually down the line, people are just going to just, that's how people are going to stay in touch 24/7 is social networking, man. And it's like, whatever happened to hanging out with people and just, I don't know, man. It's just, you know what, man? It's like this, you know, like I tell Eric all the time, man, what would fix every problem on this planet right now, somebody would have to blow up the internet. But obviously that's impossible, because the internet is, it's not one place. It's a network. So can't be done.
Yeah. So it's like people walking in silos. They're just almost essentially reduced to a robotic state.
Yeah, man, it's human sabotage, man. Nobody seems to realize what's going on, man. It's like we are being glued to machines, man. And it's like, and like I said, dude, I'm not criticizing it, because I feel like I'm above it, man. I'm not trying to talk down to anybody, because, you know, I'm talking to you on my iTouch right now, and I'm probably gonna go update something on Facebook when I'm done with this interview. But it's like, At least I can acknowledge it, and I can try and do something about it personally for my own life. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But I think, yeah, man. And like I was going back to retail and stores, like, you know, a lot of people buy their clothes online now. All you need to know your size. Okay, I'm gonna go buy my Converse shoes on the internet. I don't need to go to a store. Why drive over there when I can just do it online? I'll receive them in 2 days for the same price, or maybe even cheaper off some Chinese, you know, some Chinese website. It's just like, it's scary, man. There will be no more stores and no more jobs in 100 years. Everything will be, you know, either a delivery service or a storage warehouse. That's how it's going to be, man.
Interesting. Now, we'll kind of change gears up a little bit, and this gets even a little more serious here.
Okay.
In my opinion, suicide is a plague that tears apart families from loved ones and friends, brothers and sisters, friends, you know, on and on. Do you think that suicide is ever a solution?
See, this is where I gotta say, like, nobody can ever criticize a person in that state of mind, because you don't know what that person's going through, and unless you're there yourself, you can't really, you know what I mean? It's like watching an Ultimate Fighting fight and say, hey man, you should have done a chokehold right there, but you're not that guy. You don't know if he's tired. You don't know, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can't say things for other people, man, because you're not that person, and nobody knows what they will do unless they're in that given situation. Obviously, you know, I can say maybe suicide is maybe the cowardly way out, but it's at the same time, I don't know, man. It's like, what is that guy going through? Does he even care anymore? Like, things like that, you know? I definitely think that before anybody does that, they should consider the people around them. But obviously, if you're at that such a desperate state where you don't care anymore, you're probably not considering anything at all. So, it's hard to say, man. I won't say yes or no, because it's definitely up to the individual, man, just like anything else.
Yeah. So, is there such a thing as hope? I mean, for a person that's going through... Because recently I lost a good friend of mine to suicide. Okay. And it's like, dude, there is hope. You know, it's not just a word.
Well, because people who are in that state will say, no, there is no hope. But, like, as easy as it is to get into a state where you feel like there's nothing that can be done, there's always an opposite spectrum to that, you know? Whatever can get you into that kind of a hole, there's also a way you can get out of it. I mean, you know, it's not like just once you're there, you can never get out, man. It's like there's ways to, you know, I can't tell you what ways. I mean, I've never felt that way. I mean, I get bummed out in the winter, but I've never felt anywhere close to anything like that, man. That's, you know, I think some people are just predisposed to feeling that way, but like, there's always hope for anything, man. I mean, you know, as much as there's negative in this world, there's also the positive. That's what keeps things going round, and you just got to try and find it.
Yeah.
And that's being a musician, man, and playing extremely hard music is a everyday mental battle, man. It's so easy to psych yourself out. Oh, I'm gonna have a shitty show, man. I got all this shit to play tonight. I got all these fucking parts. You know, there's a lot of shit going on. It's easy to psych yourself out and tell yourself you're gonna fuck up somewhere, but you just say, whatever, man. Okay, I'll fuck up. Whatever, man. Who cares? Who's going to criticize me? Some guy's going to say I had a sloppy fill. How's that going to change my life in any way? I will remain alive and I'm still breathing. It's just a show. I just got to have fun. So you gotta just try and look at things positively, or it's just, there's no point, man. There's just no point in looking at things in a negative fashion.
Yeah. That's good to hear. What brought this to mind was, some time ago I received... an email, actually I'm on an email list for an indie record label called Deep Elm Records.
Okay.
And they had, it was like a special announcement, and basically it was like a suicide awareness campaign.
Okay.
In how to encourage people to seek help and to talk about things, you know. And that really struck me, because it happened around the same time I lost my friend. And so I thought, you know, I'd like to do something, you know. So I've been asking around, you know, different friends and labels and people if they're interested. Hey, you know, if you got a song you'd like to put up, I'd like to offer it as a download and, you know, to make this awareness come about, you know, hey, suicide is not the answer, you know. At least that's my view, you know.
Definitely.
And so, you know, hey, if you know of anybody that would be interested in that, let me know, because I definitely want to get the word out there, because not everyone has the same belief system. Hey, that's no problem. Last question for you. Would you, like for a live show, would you ever consider, and this is kind of a crazy question, but consider attaching, you know, the very small, like tiny webcams or like those spy cameras, like to your hands or wrists, so that when you're playing live, it'll be shown on a huge screen?
Somebody would, oh, like, okay, I see what you're saying, like clinician style, where you can see the hands moving or see the feet.
Exactly. So when you see that hand move, you see it on a big screen, and you see the drum tip hit the head, you know.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool, actually. That's a good idea, man. I know clinicians do that kind of stuff, and you know, when, you know, big festivals have massive productions, they'll have a camera crew, and you know, they're filming live, and they also have it on a teleprompter. But shit, to do, just to have it, you know, it's cheap to buy webcams nowadays, man. That's actually pretty, I'll run that by Eric, man. It's pretty cool.
Yeah! Yeah, and in fact, you know, I don't know, I just got these crazy ideas. You know, you not only on the drummer, but also on the bass player and Eric, you know, on JJ and Eric. So you got three screens.
Like, you got like, and then just like rotating images, like, you know, you got like a piece of software that just switches from camera to camera every 10 seconds. Yeah, that would be killer, man.
Yeah, and then not only do you have the monstrous sound of Hate Eternal, but you got them larger than life. You know,
yeah, man.
Live and in person, you know, a two effect, you know, a dual effect, you know, not only...
And a lot of these clubs nowadays, they're set up for media, you know, like they got, they'll have a flat screen up front, and they'll have a flat screen maybe in the freaking bathroom, you know what I mean? A lot of these clubs, they have like that kind of setup where they got TVs kind of everywhere, so you could run a media feed to that input and have the shit going on everywhere. I know some venues do that already, like, Shit, is it House of Blues in Chicago? I'm not sure, man, but they got the shit playing on a screen and it's all over the place. Like, you even go to the bathroom and you can see the shit on the screen.
Yeah, like, that sounds like something they would do, yeah.
Yeah, don't miss the show.